He approaches such a tree
due to his strong appetite
and thus he suffers.
And thus he suffers.
He would like to acquire water.
He would like to acquire water.
But he is simply illusioned.
But he is simply illusioned.
By a mirage.
By a mirage.
And he runs after it.
And he runs after it.
Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that the Bhagavad philosophy is meant for people who are completely free from envy. Paramo-nirva-sarana. The material world is full of envious people. Even within one's inner circle, there is much backbiting. And this is compared to the sound vibration of a cricket in the forest. One cannot see the cricket, but one hears its sounds and thus becomes aggrieved. When one takes to Krishna consciousness, one always hears unpalatable words from relatives. This is the nature of the world. One cannot avoid mental distress due to the backbiting of envious people. Being very much aggrieved, sometimes one goes to a sinful person for help, but he has no means to help because he has no intelligence. Thus, the living entity is disappointed. This is like running after a mirage in the desert in an effort to find water. Such activities do not produce any tangible results. Due to being directed by the illusory energy, a conditioned soul suffers in so many ways. Om Jnana Tumandrasya Jnana Tumandrasya Jakshar Mulkam Deya Tasman Shri Guru Nama Shri Chaitanya Amaro Vishnam Sapitam Yena Bhuttare Swayam Rupa Tadamu Yam Tadati Swara Pranatrikam He Krishna Karuna Sandho Deya Vandavaya Prate Gopesha Gopika
envy towards someone is backbiting. is gossiping, talking ill about that person. So that actually shows this is the envy, and there is envy in the heart for that particular devotee. We'll talk about in devotee context more later. So if we see in devotee circles, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling to Vrindavan, he went via Varanasi and he was staying with Chandrasekhar Acharya there. And he would go to have prasad and tapa mishra's house on many occasions. And they very much agreed that even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would do his kirtan throughout Varanasi, he was attracting many followers. People's hearts were changing just by hearing the chanting by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And his fan following was increasing. People started to like him, follow him, get so much attracted just by seeing him, pure devotion was coming to them. So this news of course reached to the Mayavadi philosophers, the sannyasis there, who were very prominent, because till now Varanasi is a hub for them. Even the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu transformed thousands of devotees there. Still Varanasi is a Mayavadi hub. And that time it was even more there. So this news reached them, and Chandrasekhar Acharya and Tapa Mishra were very much agreed that there is so much backbiting happening. So Chilkota writes that they were doing backbiting to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were talking about him. And Prabhupada says that this is one of the problems of Mahavadis. They talk the backbite about Vaishnavas. They talk ill about them. And of course, the whole person in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu transformed thousands of Mayavadi sannyasis and the whole pastime. But this same mentality, the same disease of speaking ill about someone due to envy can creep in devotee community also. Especially when someone has some problems, and especially when someone is struggling, or especially when we see someone not following the process properly. And we'll go through some of the examples what Srila Prabhupada, how he expressed when he saw some mistakes in some devotees, and that actually is really heart transforming. Just to hear and know those pastimes of Srila Prabhupada's approach, how he was dealing with devotees who may have some issues. But in some cases, when criticism happens, Prabhupada explains, in Surat actually this happened when devotee approached Srila Prabhupada. And this devotee, when he approached Srila Prabhupada, he expressed his issue, his problem, that Prabhupada, I have noticed that I have a lot of envy in my heart towards devotees. And specifically to this particular devotee, how to solve it, how to deal with it. And Prabhupada told him, is there any good qualities you see? Is there anything positive you see? And Prabhupada said, yes. Oh, this devotee said, yes, I see many good also. I mean, there's a lot of good happening also around that. But this particular aspect of that devotee is really troubling. And that creates a lot of envy and feeling of hate, ill feeling towards that devotee. So then Prabhupada said, it's very hard to immediately overcome envy within the heart. It's very difficult to very easily uproot this very serious disease. But you try for it by seeing the good in that devotee. But if you cannot direct your envy towards atheistic beings, canalize your, because then he explained what envy is. Envy is that you don't like the person. The Prabhupada made a very important point. He said, please do not bring this mentality within this devotee family, that you don't like this devotee, you don't like that devotee. Leave it outside the family. Leave it outside and use it in Krishna service, that preach against the Mayavadi atheists, Mayavadi philosophers. Preach against the atheistic views. But don't bring this, I hate this devotee, I don't like this devotee, into this family of devotees. So that was a nice, simple lesson, Srila Prabhupada gave, that envy means you don't like that person. That's why you are enemies of someone or certain activities you don't like. But then Sri Prabhupada mentioned that this is what happens when we see some issues or some problems in some devotee. We use it to even pull them down. And in many occasions we have seen that, of course, you know, Sri Prabhupada's mercy, his potency in spreading Krishna consciousness, where his presence itself would transform people's heart. But one very interesting pastime that happened, it's an old conversation in Hong Kong in 1972. Krishna Prabhupada is expressing a very important point. And in that conversation, Shyam Sundar Prabhu, Gurjan Prabhu, Jagataranga, so many devotees were sitting. And then Sri Prabhupada was explaining that you see, if someone comes and tells him, leave me and go away, he will not do it. You see all these devotees, if someone comes and tells him, take this much money and leave me and go away, they will not do it. Then he pointed out, you see, Jagataranga, you know, she was an actress, she could have made millions of dollars. And she left that. And she's following her instructions. Prabhupada is telling that new conversation. This is in Hong Kong, 1972. And then Prabhupada is saying that, I just asked her, go to Hong Kong, marry Gurjan Prabhu, she just agreed. So how sincere is that? How sincere is that? So Prabhupada was basically pointing out the strength, the importance of sincerity there in devotees. So Prabhupada says, how sincere is that? Shyam Sundar's father is so rich. He has so much money, but he will not leave me. This is because of their sincerity. So then Prabhupada made the point there that their sincerity is based on, they are basically utilizing their sincerity to just follow my instructions. And that's the reason for their success. Now, continuing with that later, because Prabhupada was making this very clear point of sincerity, he was saying that now, if someone is not very serious, but they will be sincere, of course these are all very great personalities whom he was talking, but he was making a point there, that if someone is not very serious, but if they are very sincere, because they are sincere, their practice of Krishna consciousness will bring them back even in whatever may happen, and they leave Krishna consciousness. Yes, so even if they are very sincere, but they are not very serious in practicing. So because of their sincerity, in due course, they will come back to a very serious practice of Krishna consciousness. But what happens with backbiting towards such people who may be sincere, but they may not show some serious they may not have some serious practice of Krishna consciousness, they may even go away. And we will see some of the examples how Srila Prabhupada dealt with that situation. Then if backbiting happens for such people due to some mistakes they do, their sincerity is also basically sidelined and they lose hope for coming back. So this was the whole point that was coming through. So because Srila Prabhupada was in Calcutta, Prabhupada received a call. His actually secretary picked up the call. And the call was basically that one of the sannyasis in the West, they have found him smoking ganja. So that was, Amar Vishnu was there, and then Prabhupada heard this, and Prabhupada immediately replied, send him a message straight away that and tell him that I have rejected him. So Amar Vishnu was there. After the message was passed on, a call was given to Mahavishnu asked Prabhupada, is he really doing it? And Prabhupada had very teary eyes and he said, there is no way I can reject him. And Prabhupada said, he cannot do such a mistake that I reject him. Because Lord Nityananda's mercy is unlimited and he will never reject. But just so that he comes back, I have spoken hard, strongly, that I have rejected you, so that he comes back to his senses. So we see sometimes senior devotees or devotees who are in authority, they may speak strongly, which may appear, they may criticize certain actions of certain devotees. But if following that, we who are not in authority, who are not supposed to do it, if we follow and repeat certain behavior, then we are following in a serious way. And that's where in last when we were discussing about the offenses towards devotees, very similar point was coming, that that offenses towards devotees is a very common practice which is capable enough of completely destroying one's enthusiasm for devotional service. So the problem with offending the devotees is that it disturbs our consciousness, but it makes us very unenthusiastic to further practice devotional service. And it is most of the time, offenses towards devotees is nothing but uncontrolled expression of envy. One time, Prabhupada showed us, he mentioned in the class, that a very simple solution to deal with envy, once you figure out that I envy such devotee, is that just find out opportunity. Once you have figured out and you see this is a disease, many times the problem is you don't see it as a disease in us and we just keep expressing it, keep just, it is overflowed so much that after many years you figure out that we are already, we have damaged ourselves enough. Bro was mentioning it, and I was thinking on that point, that it is so simple a solution, but it's so amazing. And if you figure out that, okay, such and such devotee is doing so great, but I have envy for such and such devotee, just go and start serving him or her. And you will see in due course your envy subsides. And actually it's worth practicing, you know. And we all have feel certain envy, certain in some cases jealousy towards progress of certain devotees. So here we are discussing two aspects. One is envy towards someone who is doing better than us, and the other side, an expression of envy which is backbiting in this verse, is towards the devotee who may do some mistakes. So, Srila Prabhupada in the past time, when one devotee, Rishra, who he was mentioning this past time, he was there when this happened. He was mentioning one Srila Prabhupada's pastime, where it shows again the compassion side of Srila Prabhupada, how he was dealing with someone who was in trouble. So he was mentioning that in 1972, 3 and 4, ISKCON was at its peak in terms of Prabhupada initiating many devotees. But the other peak was also happening in ISKCON, and that was many were leaving. So, and they were leaving on a very alarming rate. And because devotees were leaving on a very alarming rate, of course the leaders were concerned, and they came and discussed with Srila Prabhupada that many devotees are leaving ISKCON due to whatever reasons. But we are initiating so many people also, how to balance, how to fix it basically. And when Prabhupada's reply actually shocked them. And Prabhupada said, yeah, I know about it, that it is happening in our society. But most of them, he said, only very, very few have started to eat meat. His response was that, I know they are leaving, but don't be critical about the situation. Only very, very few have started to eat meat. So then Prabhupada was explaining that I am happy that at least some improvement they have done in their life. And that was the vision. That's a very amazing question actually. That I am happy that they have improved to some degree. And I was thinking when I heard this question that when devotees like Srila Prabhupada have this vision towards a particular devotee, a soul's progress towards Krishna, they see that the soul has progress, because this is how Krishna sees that, oh, he has come a little closer to me. But we become critical when we see some fault in someone, because we don't have the vision of Krishna or the story. So our vision is very contradictory, it's very opposite. Because of our fault-finding nature, we just see what he is not doing or what she is not able to do or not doing. But Prabhupada, it's very amazing response Prabhupada gives. That they are initially devoted, some are Brahman initiated, some are sannyasis, and they have left everything, living a complete life of a so-called dharmi. But Prabhupada said, yeah, but most of them are not eating meat. So there is a progress before they were. And by, see, we don't have access to Krishna as simple at this stage. We don't have, other than his holiness, we don't know how Krishna actually as a person is operating. Thinking what is purely what is gives us an idea of what is Krishna's vision towards us. So, I've heard this few times from one info that he was quoting from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, that when it comes to other devotees, when it comes to other devotees' actions, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says this, I think he has some principles chopped down for devotees, and one of that he says, that when it comes to other devotees, be very lenient. He didn't do that, she didn't do that. Why not? Why this? But when it comes to oneself, one should be restricted. This is something I personally also want to learn. That when it comes to us, be strict. But when it comes to others, be lenient. Unless, there is a exclamation mark here, along with the star underneath. Unless you have a responsibility of particular service done by the devotee. Then you have, because then the service actually done properly, then you have to, of course, tell the person how to do it properly. But other than that, as generally, as a community within, and as a devotee, you just don't, just should not just keep saying, keep watching, keep noticing the faults. It's very unhealthy for us as devotees plus as a community. And Srila Prabhupada gives examples, amazing responses. He is showing that. In Bhagavad Gita 12th chapter, verse number 13 and 14, which talks about again many aspects, but what it touches on, and we says, Adveshta sarva bhutanam maitre karana eva cha nirmamone ahankara ahamsa dukh nirmamone ahankara ahamsa dukha sukha sama dukha sukha. So the translation is, it says, one who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities. One who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego. Who is equal in both happiness and distress. Who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, engaged in devotional service with determination. His mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. That's a very, very direct response Krishna is giving. That if someone is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, such a person is very, very dear to me, with all other qualities, of course. Further in the purport, when Srila Prabhupada mentions about being very much agreed, such a person who is lost in this forest of material existence, which is us as conditioned souls. Sometimes one goes to a sinful person for help, but he has no means to help because he has no intelligence. Thus, the living entity is disappointed. This is a very important aspect again to understand, that many times as devotees, when our relationship with devotees gets sour due to some reason, whatever, our mistake or someone else's mistake, that's not important. But important is when our relationship gets sour, we decide, we choose that from now on, I will take guidance, help and association of my old friends. My family, my parents, if they are not devotees. Why? Because they were very loving to me. They never treated me like this. They were always appreciating. They were always encouraging. They never fought for me. So this is a serious fact, which as devotees you must be very careful. Then, when that happens, a very nice example is given by one devotee who was mentioning that devotional family is like an umbrella. And because it's like an umbrella, if by chance one side of the umbrella breaks, we still have shelter of others part of the umbrella. We don't have to throw umbrella and keep looking for something else. We still have shelter. So we take shelter of another devotee. If certain particular devotee or particular group within the community doesn't satisfy or there is certain issue and our relationship has really become very sour, then one should go and seek guidance from other devotees who may help us in our times of need. But the problem is when one changes the umbrella of devotee, basically shelter of devotees, and seek guidance outside, then it's a serious problem. We went on a retreat with Gurujan Prabhu, and one Mataji asked this question. And she had some complaints. She just went on for 2-3 minutes to tell what the problem is she is going through. And then she said, I feel like spending some time with my mother. And she is nowhere near a devotee. So I want to spend time with my mother. At least few months now, I'm just pretty exhausted, done with the whole thing. Prabhu gave a very simple answer. This is almost 10 years back, I heard, but it's stuck inside, you know. Prabhu said, that's okay. Of course, you want to spend time with your mother, it's fine, but don't take guidance. And don't take guidance from her when it's about your life. If your spiritual decisions, don't discuss that with her. Because if she has no spiritual intelligence, then on what basis she is going to give you guidance on your spiritual journey? It's such a blunder one can do to one's life. Then how to take guidance on a spirit, for a spiritual journey, for a spiritual path, to someone who has no spiritual intelligence? You know, this is one serious mistake many devotees have done. Even I was mentioning the other day, even in Bhaktivinoda's boy, many years back, he was very nicely practicing, very good devotee, chanting 16 rounds. One day I asked him, we're chanting for so many months, why don't you wear Kantipalana? You need only Prasadam, there's no issues, just get more serious. He said, okay, I'll ask my mother. I suggested him, you know, just continue, why ask mother? He asked, mother said no. Mother said, don't wear Kanti Mala. And he came back and told us that mother is saying, don't wear Kanti Mala. I said, how does she know the importance of Kanti Mala? Why you ask her at first place? Then I told her, if you like a girl, if you want to marry a girlfriend, you go and ask your mother or what? If you actually are convinced about something, And I said, if you're an IT guy, your mother is a housewife, you need a guidance for your IT studies from your mother. You may be an engineer and your father may be a CA. Will you take engineering guidance from your father? You can take general guidance on how to progress, but you can't take specific guidance from them who are not expert in that field. So why you took spiritual guidance from your mother? Your explanation is, no, mother, my mother, I love her. Within two months, 16 rounds became 8 rounds, 8 became 4, and he was out of Bhagavan. Now he is only a Janmashtami with the correct temple. Really, I saw him the other day, I said, where are you? Chapter finished. Just one thing he did wrong. He took guidance about his spiritual life from someone who has no expertise or no knowledge about that subject matter. So this is, Prabhupada made a simple point, very clear point. He cannot help you because he doesn't have intelligence. So why to seek shelter from someone who doesn't even know how to give shelter on that particular area? So one should save oneself and not run after such a mirage where there is no water. No water to quench our hunger, our thirst for spiritual or have our happiness to them. Few days back, I was speaking to one boy, young boy, 23, 24 year old. And he came and he started speaking, he started giving me whole political analysis of me. I follow news. I thought I know a little bit about politics here. When he started speaking, I was dumbstruck. I said, my God, this 23 year old boy, he knows so much about politics, the whole analysis on operational level. On how propaganda happens, what is media doing, what is this party, opposition, everything. For half an hour he spoke. And I'm shocked. I said, my God, what should I even tell him? A few years back, God who explains what is Lok Sabha, Rajya Sabha in India. Now this person has such an accent, I was shocked. How does he know so much? What is he, old boy? And after explaining the whole thing, all the problems, and because he wants to solve it, he wants to really get on the field and solve the problem. After telling the whole thing, he said, but I don't know what to do. And then we started discussing from Bhagavad Gita. And then, you know, when you initially you don't know how to respond, but when you start Bhagavad Gita, then Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada that, Prabhupada said this, that, then it starts making sense to you also what you are speaking. And then you start explaining. And then we had a good discussion for more than 1 hour. And then he was thank you, then he left. And later I was thinking, if it was not for Srila Prabhupada's books, if it was not for Srila Prabhupada's approach to how to involve Krishna consciousness in our practical life, there is no way I could have even spoken anything in front of this boy. I was useless. But then immediately a very serious feeling of gratitude came, that thank you Srila Prabhupada for being really useful. Because it's your knowledge that you can speak something. Otherwise, how do you help such people? There is no possibility, because he was really, really expert in what he was speaking, but fully lost, completely lost, to a degree that he said, I feel depressed, even after knowing so much, I cannot do anything on the field. Really, really felt very thankful that at least we have Srila Prabhupada's books and his purports, his lectures, his conversations, that we can be of some help, you know. It's amazing. So these are few of the things I just want to discuss from this verse. Any questions or comments? Yes, sorry.
Thank you.
You can take the mic. Audience can hear it also.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. Again, a very practical class. I really appreciate that part of the presentation. So, Prabhu, I wanted to ask you a question about, you know, the tendency of envy is there. I would like your thoughts on when we have a justification for when we see faults in others. And, you know, you have mentioned in your previous class as well about the offensive mentality. But the problem that I see here is the justification. This person is like this. It's an objective fact. I'm not envious with them. This person is like this. He always does this. So how do we settle the problem in the light of objective facts? Thank you.
I mentioned in the previous class for the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's article where he mentioned that there can be three reasons to even express or if you see any fault in someone, there should be only three reasons to even talk about it. First is that it is helpful for that devotee, that particular devotee whom you are mentioning. It should be helpful for that devotee. Second reason Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives is that it should be helpful for the world at large. And the third reason he gives is it should be helpful for the person who is speaking. In most of the cases, it's neither three, none of the three actually. So when you see, that's why I said, when Srila Prabhupada mentioned that I reject him, tell him that I have rejected such and such sannyasi because he is smoking ganja. Prabhupada spoke so strongly for the benefit of that particular devotee. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives an amazing example. I was amazed by the example. He says, in how many talks have you criticized Jalaya Madhai? There is hundreds of lectures you will hear criticism for Jalaya Madhai. But that criticism is beneficial for the world at large. So that type of criticism is acceptable. They did like that, they were plunderers, they were this, they were that. But that is a healthy criticism because it helps the world at large. But the criticism that is our disease is nothing but watering our weed, which is fault finding, which is backbiting, which is purely envy. In most of the cases, when we express our concern about some devotee, if we actually think about these three things, okay, I'm criticizing, but it's an objective truth that such and such person is doing this mistake, such and such person is stealing, such and such person is basically not doing service properly. If we are actually concerned about that devotee, our community and ourselves, we will actually meditate on the right means to do it. A very, very right, very proper means to do it. Either we go to the authority of the devotee to make sure that they do the job, or we first ask forgiveness. And that devotee can sense it, you know, that this person is very much concerned and has affection for me, that he is communicating with me. So if you just fix this one issue, you are already a gem, you will shine even more. So, honestly speaking, in your observation also you must have seen that we don't have any of the three criteria while criticizing. So if we are very sincerely concerned about that person, our community, and our own spiritual progress, while criticizing, we will be very, very careful. And in most of the cases, we will keep our mouth shut. Actually, keeping our mouth shut is the safest thing, because in most of the occasions, we are not supposed to speak any less, but we still speak. As you said, we appear as it is very objectively proved that this person is a fallen soul. But that time, another thought can help us, which is, how Krishna must be seeing this devotee? What is Krishna's vision for this devotee? How is he seeing? Is he seeing that, yes, one day in a week he will clean the temple, but other 6 days he is a sleeping mom? Or what is Krishna's vision for that devotee? Then it helps us actually. That was my answer. Yes, sir.
Thank you for the wonderful class. I was thinking when you said about parents, we should not take spiritual guidance from them.
Yeah.
Probably this one thought that has been lingering in my mind. So, because most of people of my age and this generation would have parents who are not spiritually educated or equipped. So in that, and similarly happens with the technology as well, technology or profession as well. So we parents, they would want to guide, they would want to give a better future, they have positive thought towards our future. But then when it comes to guidance, we can't seek professional guidance for sure, and spiritual guidance obviously we can't seek from them. So what kind of guidance is allowed from parents, and how do we give them that position of a parent if you are not taking guidance?
It's a very important question, thank you. See, parents are like, you know, Prabhupada mentioned, you know, especially the mother's love is very close to how the Supreme Lord may love. Of course, it's thousands and millions of times more. Krishna's heart is having vatsalya or love for the living entities thousands and millions of times more than a mother's heart. But the closest in material world is you find a mother's love or a parent's love for the child. So from their side, they only want to do good for the child. That is their approach. And it must be always appreciated by charity. That from parents' side, they just want to do good for me. As peers, as friends, we may out of envy want to harm you. But parents doesn't have envy for the child. So they will never want to harm the child. But if they don't have intelligence about spiritual life, then they will only help based on what intelligence they have. And parents being completely a product of this material nature, their intelligence is only trained to make money, because that's what gives happiness, and they want their child to have happiness, and they feel a material successful life is the source of happiness, because that's what they are aiming for. So they see that as happiness, and they want to give you happiness, because that's what they want to give you out of love. So they want to pass on that same understanding what they have, that a material successful life is going to give you happiness, my dear son, my dear daughter. So please focus on that, and then you come and say, I find a better source of happiness, which I am experiencing. And what is that, my dear son? That is Krishna consciousness. And they get scared. This is exactly what Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita. They get scared because it's not matching with their understanding of happiness. So there is a conflict between the understanding of happiness. So if as children we can change their understanding of happiness, then rather fighting with them, our problem is solved. Honestly, I'm telling you. So with parents, the best way to deal is do not scare them. This is my suggestion to all the devotees who become, or new devotees. The first mistake they do is they want to show their learning to the parents, which is natural when you learn something you want to share with your family because you expect appreciation. But in most of the occasions you scare them away. Why? Because their definition of happiness, which they have passed on to you, is not matching your definition of happiness, which devotees have passed on to you. So instead of that, please work on changing your definition of happiness. It'll be a serious help for them and for us also in our dealings with them. That instead of scaring them away with how much great devotee you have become after 6 months of practicing nonsense, just act in such a way that their definition changes. Then they will be a serious support for you. Even if the world goes against you, when Krishna consciousness, the parents will believe you. And it really works, I'm telling you. It's a proven thing, it works. I was told initially by a devotee that once you have preached to the whole world, when everyone is covered, then come and give lecture to yourself. The first day only, I heard something vomited. Second day, I heard something vomited. Third day, I heard vomited. Fourth day, I vomited. My mother was so scared that she called the devotees. What is happening to him? And fourth day only, I scared her. And fifth day, a devotee came to my house and chastised me. Then he told me, once full word is preached, then come and start preaching to them. So coming back to your specific question, is what guidance you can take from parents? My very clear suggestion is in the field in which they are expert. In which they are expert. Now you will say they are not expert in anything. They are actually. To give values, they have given us values. They are how to show love, you can learn from them. How to be selfless, you can learn from your parents. There are so many things we can learn from our parents. How they sacrifice for us. At least the essence we can learn, huh? And use it in Krishna service by serving devotees. So the same essence we can learn from them. How to cook, you can learn from your mother. How to go through all the hardships and still work hard for the family, you can learn from your father. How he took so much risk in his life just to maintain the family, you can learn from your father. How he was constantly meditating on the welfare of the family, you can learn from your father. Because in the future you may have to come to his family. Then you have to take care of him. So many things you can learn from your family. It's not that a specific field only they can teach you. So there are many things you can learn from your family. And what to speak of if they are devotees, then it's like, I mean, if they are very advanced devotees, then it's a Bhakti Siddhanta Mala Bhakti Siddhanta type of combination. But of course, they are pure Vaishnavas, but if parents are very advanced, then they will be seriously. Is that okay? Does that answer?
Yes, sir. Thank you. And one last question. You spoke about the person who spoke about politics, and you spoke about poverty. Would you be able to share more about families? Like what you mentioned.
So I started thinking also about the lecture, why you're confused, because you're in mode of action. Then I suggested him, I've never told him in the whole conversation that your desire to help the world is wrong. I just said, yeah, I want to help you also in your contribution to the world and politically solving the problem, but we will do it in Bhagavad Gita style. That's what I put there for sure. Because we were so full of that. If I told him your nonsense, you could also your conversation would have finished in 2 minutes. You would have told me, thank you for prasadam, out. But so I just somehow wanted him to be attracted to Bhagavad Gita. You know, many people say, Lord, the answer is everything, Lord, the answer is everything. It is our devotees' responsibility to make people aware that they know that can answer everything. Because it can. Because the Lord can answer everything. So then we went through the modes, and then I suggested him that if you want to achieve that same thing, you try and act in mode of goodness. Try and be like the mode of goodness. And then when he understood that one, then I introduced mode of pure goodness. What is that? What does that mean? And so he was able to understand that way. Then finally I came to a conclusion that you want to help people politically because you want to make people happy, either right or not. He said, yes, I want to make people happy. I said, how can you give something if you don't have it? And at that point he agreed 200%. I'm not happy. He said, I said, first we work on making you happy. And then start with it, then the problem. Help yourself, and that will help the world. So that's all the conversation was. So he was finally satisfied with whatever he did. Please don't tell this. I'm very sorry, you don't tell this.
Thank you for the nice question.
Thank you for the nice question, Sylvia. Actually, praying to Radharani is very powerful if you have envy, because she, her way of dealing in spiritual world is the highest expression of a person who can be non-envious. Because what happens in spiritual world is Radharani wants to push everyone towards Krishna. That's the competition in spiritual world. She wants to push everyone towards Krishna. All the devotees want to push Radharani towards Krishna. So praying to her, if this quality can come to us, that let me put all the devotees forward and towards Krishna, which we learn from Radharani, then envy will not even bother us. Material world competitiveness is there where we want to put ourselves in front and put everyone back. So one thing you can pray to Radharani is if she can, you can pray for me also. That if you can learn this one thing, materially if you want to progress, materially if someone wants to progress, the solution is you have to step on other people's head. That's how people progress materially. Spiritually if you want to progress, you have to allow other devotees to step on your head to go forward. That means you have to allow other devotees to serve. Basically make arrangements for others to come closer to Krishna. And that if we can develop the blessings of Srimati Radharani, then we are successful. Then envy will not bother us. It will not be a problem for dealing with. Is that right? Thank you. But we have to get to work for us. Anything else? Yes, Mathur.
Thank you for
coming to the
relation. Sometimes in our emotional service, even we feel a lot of tense, a lot of devoted friends. But like in my case, I always find shelter in my parents and my sisters. So even if any problems come, your last shelter, the person who I am, the first and the last one with them only. So is that okay, or is that because I'm still spiritually weak and more materially attached?
No, please understand the point here. There is no harm in having a very loving, warm, affectionate relationship with our family. Bhujaguru's point was, don't take spiritual guidance from them. Basically, don't take guidance from them in making spiritual decisions.
But see, anyway, they are cultivating the values. And if we have values, the bhakti is very easy. But if we don't have values, it's very hard to perform bhakti. So even if they are not giving the spiritual guidance, they are cultivating the good qualities. So that is...
Yeah, use those good values which you have learned from the Krishna service. I'll give you an example that will make it clear. For example, you come to Mangalarati every day, right? You try and anyways you make it, every day you come. Now, when your mother or sister sees that, okay, one night was very late for you, you were busy, it is that, family is there. Next 3-4 days don't go. Out of the reflection, they will tell you, and they must be telling you also. So now, that particular decision will be based on how you want to do spiritual, how you want to progress in spiritual life, and you will not take that suggestion from them. Is it true?
Yeah.
So, So, or did you ask some other spiritual masters to choose? How much to read? How to chant? How to offer Krishna Prasadam? How to bring up your kids in Krishna consciousness? You make your very specific spiritual decisions. I am talking about those decisions. It has nothing to do with reducing our love and care with our family. It has nothing to do with that. It is only and only when it comes to our spiritual decision making. Do not seek guidance from someone who doesn't have that. But if they are very much appreciative and they are very much encouraging and they very much want to walk with you on their spiritual journey, then they are the best friends to take guidance from my mind. So, you understand? The principle is very simple. Principle is, we don't want anyone else's intelligence, if it is not trained spiritually, to hamper our spiritual intelligence, or at least to a level where we want to come at. That is the very simple point. It has nothing to do with reducing our relationship. You know, many of brahmacharis are there, their families may not think like a brahmachari. Huh? But doesn't mean they go against them. If their families are devotees, then they don't have to basically cut their relationship or finish their relationship with the family. But they understand that because they are living in a Vyavastha environment, a family environment, very close association with them will naturally rub on a brahmachari. So it's not a relationship is lost, a way to cut our relationship. It's very simple that we have to very carefully judge how much closely and we have to associate and on what basis we have to take instructions and guidance from them. I will not take brahmachari instructions on family members. I have spoken on the show. They said, we are your parents, why are you not asking us? It's not possible, it's not going to happen. I will try to go to a spiritual master and ask him. Then ask my mother and father, even though they are fully practicing the Lord, I will not ask them. Because I know they may not even appreciate what I am doing at this day. At least in front of me. It has nothing to do with not having a warm relationship. It is only to not ask very specific details about your spiritual progress if they are not able to capable of helping you. Anything else? Okay. Krantrasya Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.